the serial killer air scarf technology.
Air scarf.
New for 96. With your hosts, Kevin McCauley and Chris Nguyen.
Todd is like the worst name. Whoa. I'm sorry if there are any Todd listeners.
That's offensive to me as a Chad name hater.
Oh, I thought you were going to say your middle name is Chad, because I actually don't know what your middle name is.
Oh, it's not Chad.
Is it Kevin?
Yeah.
Twice?
It's McAllister.
Yeah. 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 Wait, I know there's a W. Oh, Walter, obviously.
No, Laura really likes the name Walter, but it is William.
I know that. Yeah. I knew that. Maybe.
Why would you know that?
I don't know. I saw it on your email address, one of like seven that you have.
I have more than seven.
You have like, your primary one is like me.com.
It's not primary. That's
wild.
Like my personal one.
How, aren't they all personal? It's not like you work for a corporation. Yeah, like I have the me.com one still, of course, because you need that for iCloud, I guess.
Technically, an LLC is a corporation, is it not?
I guess it's limited liability company.
Maybe.
No, it's a corporation, yeah.
I don't know.
I guess so. Do you consider yourself a corporation?
I'm a people, so yeah, corporations are people, my friend.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So the... So what is your, like, weirdest email suffix? Like, you've got me.com. Do you have a Hotmail still?
No. I have, like, 15 Gmails.
Okay.
And then I have, like, a few domain-based ones. And then the me.com is just, like, I used it for years because it's the most convenient because it's native to Apple Mail.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I still have a Hotmail, I think.
Really?
I haven't logged into it in years. I don't know if I guess they did. They probably deleted it.
I'm sure they purged it, yeah.
Yeah. It's owned by Microsoft, I think.
It was always owned by Microsoft.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that. Was that your first? That was my first, I think, email service.
I had, like, we had a web provider. Well, I had AOL.
Oh, yeah.
I had AOL email, and then we had a local web provider that was pdq.net.
Yeah.
I had an email on there, and then I had Hotmail, like, later high school, I think. I had Yahoo. You had to have Yahoo to have Flickr.
What?
I think you had to have a Yahoo, like, you logged into Flickr with a Yahoo address.
I don't think so, because I never had a Yahoo address, and I had a Flickr.
Okay.
That we, like, semi-met on Flickr.
Sure, yeah.
Kind of. Actually, I don't even know how we met.
Oh, who cares?
Who are you? You know what? My first email address, I forgot. My dad had a friend who had his own ISP.
Whoa.
Like, he started one up here in Houston, and his name was Ted, and...
You sure it wasn't Rudy Tomjanovich?
It was not, although his son went to my school.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, he was the spokesperson for PDQ.net.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. They had commercials on WB with Rudy T.
This, I don't know anything about sports, except I only know this because the kid went to my school, but he's the, like, manager of the Rockets in the 90s.
He was a coach.
Oh, coach. See?
He was the coach, I think, during the two championship years.
Okay. I learned something new about sports, unfortunately, today. But it was... His name was Ted, and his ISP was called TEDx. And I think my email address was something at TEDx.com. It doesn't exist anymore.
Wow.
But that was where my first website was, too.
And your first TED Talk.
Yeah. You know what? I was so afraid. We had to dial in to my dad's friend's house, basically. And that's how we connected to the internet. And I was always afraid that he would see what I was, like, looking at.
Oh, God.
Which, of course, you know, I'm Googling, or not at the time. I guess it was info-seeking hardcore nudity.
Bart Simpson naked.
Yeah, yeah. So I could just draw that.
I remember my dad, like, my uncle sent my dad an email with, like, the lightest, like, in jest with, like, the lightest pornographic images or something of, like, a female, like, washing a car or something like
in
this.
In jest?
I don't know. It was some goof. And my dad, like, saved it to the desktop or something as a joke. And I was like, and this was, like, the family computer. And I was like,
okay.
Oh, no. I was like, did they bust me on something? I was like, I felt
this
like I was.
This is where you should be looking back on this and thinking, wait. I don't think he was joking. I think they were trading pornography.
Probably, but it was like, extremely tame, but I was paranoid, like, oh, like something in my history has caught up to me and I'm busted.
Yeah.
Like I was like, somehow something I did or like whatever has resulted in this. And I like immediately deleted the evidence off the desktop.
Well, you were just downloading the images for the articles.
Right. So exactly.
It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Just for the metadata.
Yeah. So welcome to new for
96.
A internet history podcast. It's been a second.
It has.
We don't have to say that. People know.
I know. I was just thinking, every conversation we have, like, we're at a point in our lives where every conversation we have is like basically the Wayback Machine, which is the internet history website. And that's like, we were getting to the point where everything is just like, hey, remember this?
Oh God, I hate that so much. Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah. Although that is a fun website to go like and dig through.
It's cool. It's just, I wish you could, it's hard to like use it for like real like research or anything because it's like none of the pictures work, none of the links work usually.
But it did work for, so we, a few episodes ago, we looked up like old manufacturer websites and
old
dealership.
The Momentum dealership website was crazy.
The gifts were heavy back then.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's so weird how the animated GIF, and it's GIF with a hard G for me, made a resurgence. Like, I made my own animated GIFs, I remember, as a kid. I don't even remember how. Mm-hmm. Through Photoshop, I think, because it has a little animated tool of some kind. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Time with the timeline.
Yeah. Yeah.
Photoshop, the timeline. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And
I did that when I made a GIF of the GIF with the wheels on the Targa. I used the timeline.
Yeah, Kevin, we'll have to post that
again.
Yeah,
we're not going to describe a GIF, goddammit, please.
It was the Targa, it was the 993 Targa wheels that were, they're two-piece wheels with rivets, mm-hmm. and you made the rivets fall off.
You're doing what I just said we wouldn't do.
It's too late.
The rivets fell off, you know, and then the wheel rolled away from the rim barrel. Okay, in the defense of GIF... which I don't say, but one person explained it to me, and this was the only time it ever made sense, is because people would refer to as, they would say GIF. People would say, for the first like years of the format, people would describe it as a GIF, and so GIF was like shortening that.
Oh, like just GIF?
GIF. Like, give me that GIF file.
That still doesn't really make sense, because... if you're spelling like GIFT, you're still not saying GIFT.
I say GIFT.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never understood your GIFs that you've given me, but yeah, even the guy who created.
I am a good GIFT giver.
Yeah. Anyways, away from internet history and onto cars.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So we've got some topics here.
We do. Yeah. Can I go into this one that I wrote a note about on May 18th
of 2018.
This is a topic I wanted to run through. This, I thought it was an interesting discussion. I want to just like get it out there, but I was kind of fixated for on May 18th.
Yes.
Evidently, I was fixated on cars that were not designed for the U.S. market, not intended to be sold here, but were sold here by the manufacturer, not like gray market or anything. So cars where it almost seems like the manufacturer itself is surprised that the car was sold here.
Yeah.
So I think the Lexus IS300 was like a Japanese sedan, and I don't know if it was ever intended to be sold here. It was the Altezza. I don't know if the Altezza was ever intended to be sold in the U.S. market. The TSX, the first TSX Acura, was a Euro Honda Accord.
Yeah.
And then it was just placed here. One of the best examples is the Pontiac GTO. The Holden Monaro, which was, it was a car where GM said, we need a sports, like a sports coupe for America. I know, let's get this one. And a car was plucked from the Australian market and placed in the U.S.
I think those are the Pontiacs are the best examples of those. The Toyotas, I kind of think they knew they were going to do that because they'd been doing that for so long.
Okay, but hear me out. The first gen Prius, I don't think it was supposed to be sold here. It was such a hit that like 3 years after it was introduced in Japan, they sold it in America.
Right. There was actually, I think, a generation or a model that came even before the four-door like subcompact sedan that came here first in Japan. And I Might agree with you on that.
Okay. Well, the Defender, the D90.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
was,
yeah.
That was a car that was sold here. The iMiEV.
Yep.
Which started life as the Mitsubishi I, a K car.
Yep.
The Infiniti M45, which was the Nissan Gloria.
Yeah.
Evo 8. That was the first Evo that was like, this was a response to the WRX being successful.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even the first on that generation car. It was the second on that generation car. And yeah. They just sort of scrambled. Cadillac Catera, Scion IQ, Nissan Armada. This is an interesting one. This was, so the first Armada was like Titan based, right?
Right.
But the current Armada was, it's lifted whole cloth. It is a Nissan Patrol, but it came here like 4 or 5 years after it debuted as
right.
the Patrol.
Yeah.
So I think the timing is just like wacky. Mercedes B-Class electric drive. You might say the 996 GT3 was not intended to be sold here.
Maybe.
There's the whole Scion IA, Toyota Yaris, Mazda 2, weird debacle. There's a lot of small cars. You get into like any small car from GM, it's like this was probably just plucked from the Korean market or something. And
you mean Daewoos?
I'm not talking about just Daewoos, like Aveo, Saturn Astra, Dodge Colts of various kinds, the Mercury XR4 Ti, the Smart Car, the Buick Regal and Tourx.
Okay. The list goes on.
The list goes on.
The list goes on. There are too many to touch on each.
To argue
However,
with me on all of them?
I think some are legitimate. I think some were intended to be global cars.
I don't think so.
I think so. Like, I think you're spot on about the M45, say, for instance.
Sure.
Like, that was placeholder. Nissan just happened
right.
to have...
Right, placeholder's a good term.
Something, because they only sold
like two model years.
Yeah, something like that. And those were like really funky.
Yeah.
And so they were really cool.
Really cool.
Yeah, oddly enough, like the coolest ones are the ones that were never intended for here.
Yes.
But things like the Catera, I think, were intended for the U.S. market, even though it was sold as an Opel elsewhere.
Yeah.
But I do think that was kind of like...
But it's
their Mondeo kind
of. But it was rear drive, and it was only sold as a Cadillac. I know it looked like a Malibu, but it was different.
Yeah, GM was doing some stuff where like it made sense for them to fill the hole with something. I mean, they were trying to compete with like the 3 Series and.
But I think
when
they realized they were trying to compete with the series 3 Series is when they're like, oh, we got to scramble and grab something from Europe.
I think you're missing one.
The G-Wagon. That was your contribution that I thought was a really good answer.
It still
sure.
isn't intended for the U.S. market.
It's not intended for human consumption.
No.
It's not intended for civilians.
Yeah.
So that was my topic. It's something to mull over. I think our listener...
Chime in.
They could chime in.
Chime in with any other cars that you think were not intended for the U.S. market, but made its way over here nonetheless. And I like going back to your... Because you had an IS... I think it was designed for the Japanese market, but I think they intended to bring it over here to fill the place of an actual 3 Series, like a competitor.
If anything, I think that was like a wait-and-see approach, because I think for a long time in the 90s, they probably said, we are not that type of brand. We print money with the ES300. We are not aiming at the 3 Series.
Yeah.
And then I think as... my perception was always that Lexus sort of got criticism for being kind of dull.
I don't think that was the case then. Like
they
the
made
late
a real
90s.
Push in the late 90s. In 98, they made right. a real push for like, we do performance.
Yeah,
also,
the
with
GS.
The GS.
See, that's the thing. So the GS, I think the GS and the IS are spiritual siblings, I guess, because they're both very JDM looking and mm-hmm. the way they're, you know, just the feel of the car just in general. And I think those were always intended for, at some point in time, the U.S. market. I think there was kind of a longer-term plan.
It's possible. I mean, it's impossible to know. I think I know that I feel the GS was always intended to be sold here. I'm not sure about the
yeah.
IS just because it is like a new segment for them, and it is small.
You think about it, like the LS400 was the only car...
And it
car...
didn't have like a Lexus-like interior or anything.
No.
You know?
In fact, I don't think any of them, even the RX300 did not have like a Lexus-like interior. I think it's weird.
It kind of did for the time.
I don't think so. I mean, it had wood, but that's about it. I think it was pretty much like an upscale, and the Highlander wasn't even out at the time, but I think it was basically like an upscale Highlander of sorts. But the LS400, I think, was the only car really in the 90s that Lexus designed primarily for the American market.
And the Soarer.
Maybe.
I read into it. The Soror, the SC 300, 400 was designed as like the follow-up, like the next thing after the LS 400 success.
Okay. That's interesting,
like
because
the coupe flagship.
We didn't even get like the good ones here.
I know.
Which is interesting. I know. Like, you should look into, if you've never done it before, just the different Soror models that just the Japanese market got. But they were such advanced cars. Like, even I think four-wheel steering was available.
Wow.
On the, like, the GT Limited or something like that. I really wanted to get one of those after the Celsior, but I was already scared with the Celsior, like finding parts for it.
Wasn't there like a weird suspension, like hydraulic suspension version or something? That's like,
no, but it did have air suspension. But luckily that swapped out with US market struts. The only thing that I could never ever find parts for was the separate rear AC that the car had.
No, I meant on the Soror. Wasn't there a special edition with like a freakish suspension that they only made 200 of or
there
something?
Was some special suspension system. Yeah. And that's, that was one of the things. There was one for sale here for like $12,000 or something like that, like in the Houston greater area. And it was so tempting, but there were so many unique parts to the car that were already sort of failing, I think.
Yeah.
That I just couldn't do it.
Can I end this topic that I started?
Yes.
And jump to
the
next. So I went to Ohio. I saw Brad.
You
and
did
Myron.
Go to Ohio, yes.
Went to Ohio. And Brad asked me what I thought of the Porsche 996 Classic Club Coupe, is great. And he asked me with this tone of like, so what do you hate about this car? Because this is the car that went up for auction at this Porsche 75th anniversary auction.
Just recently.
Porsche made it, and the like $1.4 million price, whatever, is obviously not reflective of any sort of reality, anything to do with 996.
The deal?
This is a one of one car made by Porsche in 2023, so it's going to be worth all the money. And Jerry Seinfeld bought it. But my problem with it is, I mean, obviously, I hate it. It's a 996 restore. It is cool that it has a GT3 motor. It is aping the 997 Sport Classic, which was a special edition we didn't get here. And it's a bad car with a ducktail, and it's this light gray color and has these light gray stripes.
Yeah.
And so this 996 is like completely taking that look. It's got the fake Fuchs, it's got the same color, it's got the same ducktail, the same stripes, and applying that to the 996. And it just is baffling to me, because it's like, this is supposed to be the celebration of the 996. Like, the 996 is firmly in classic territory, so we're going to celebrate it by making a knockoff that's supposed to look like a 997. I'm surprised Porsche didn't put those headlight covers that mask off the rest of the headlight and just reveal the oval, so it looks almost like a 997.
Yeah, the aspirational.
Yeah.
Headlight covers.
It's just like, it's so bad to me.
I agree. I mean, the mechanical sounds...
The execution, all of it's great. The idea is fine, whatever. But just the, like, philosophically, it is bankrupt to model it after a 997. That just seems like a punch in the gut to the 996.
Sure.
To say the homage to the 996 is a fake 997.
That even Porsche looks at the 997 aspirationally and say, we wish that it had been the 997.
Or whoever made this. Like, it's just, obviously it comes down to like one small team's vision, which I think was totally misguided.
I do too. I mean, it was done for the internet likes.
But you could do, this is like a 10-year-old vision of internet likes.
No, it's a shame, because the other problem too is that the look, at least, I mean, I think the mechanicals are cool. Like, the idea, the engineering concept is cool, but the aesthetic execution is not good, because that's already been claimed by everyone who has rated any aftermarket parts supply company. So all you have, like, look at all the 996s with ducktails and like oversized Fuchs out there.
Right.
And they all look terrible.
So this was a statement from Porsche when it was debuted, or when it was shown. This was in like the auction specs, everything. The 911 Sport Classic 997 was to serve as the inspiration vehicle for this exclusive project, a coveted limited edition series that had never been available before in the USA. That is terrible to me.
That is terrible. I didn't know that was like the actual official line.
That was their real official line.
That's wild. So it is a 997 homage.
It
is a forward date.
So if you were to ask me what should a 996 special edition be, or like the, what is, now that we have 20 years past the 996, yeah, what would the ideal 996 build be? And I think it would be something like a like Winged Elite GT3 in Ocean Jade.
Ooh,
which
Ocean Jade's
good. Ocean Jade is the, it's yeah, the like bright green teal color that yeah was a debut color on that 996. I think it's so cool. I think it is like emblematic of the car and the time. You know, have a crazy color interior.
And it has to be pre-facelift with the GT1 yeah front.
Yeah.
Like, which is so important, I think, because no one ever gets that. It is an homage to the race car.
The race car did it,
or
because
okay
of the
fine
car.
yeah but the facelift is fine, I guess, but like I when I see like a clean base 996 pre-facelift, I think it just looks so good and so classic.
It does
It actually looks like a classic car now.
So speaking of aspirational tributes,
yes,
the Singer DLS turbo thing
yeah
also debuted this week, so this is actually sort of relevant.
So this reminds me both the classic coupe and the DLS remind me of the 930 turbo study.
Yes.
That they did, where I don't like that.
Right.
Either. I mean, the idea is neat, but the execution is so cartoonish to me. And with the oversized Fuchs and just, I don't know, the smooth over body lines, I think you kind of erase what makes those cars interesting. And this one is also kind of cartoony as well. And then, of course, how people describe this car is how, like, extreme it looks and whatnot. And mm-hmm I kind of think, you know, I don't know if it's strange to say it, I think RWB already did this. Like, the extreme, mm-hmm, like, wide look, the extreme just kind of interpretation of 911s and race cars and whatnot. And I don't know. This doesn't seem like, it doesn't, it, they've gone kind of cartoony. And it
yeah
seems like they're, again, doing it for the likes more than like doing something interesting. That the original Singer was such an interesting idea, like so original.
Mm-hmm.
Cherry picked the best parts of all 911s
yes
and put it into this, the reimagined
right
911.
Okay, so a few years ago, they came out with the DLS, which I've got a picture for you. I thought it was hideous because it was like the base Singer, but with more like aero stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And holes. And I just
giant Fuchs.
Giant Fuchs, giant like bolt-on flares.
Yep.
It just took all the elegance out of the Singer,
yeah,
I thought. And so when the DLS came out and I thought it was bad and everyone thought it was good, I said, like, you know, I don't like this. It's hard to put my finger on why, but part of it is because you've got the Singer 911 takes all of the good stuff, like you said, from the 911 history. It is like a 73 RSR,
yep,
but refined.
Yeah.
So it's like instead of this like 2010s vision of aero, adding that to the car, it's
yeah
like if they're going to do aero, I was like, they should make it like a 935 or something.
Yeah.
So I like said they should do what they've just done.
And then they but, did
and,
it.
And then they and did it. I don't like it. I think the execution looks fine. I don't get the philosophy of it. I wouldn't want to drive it. I wouldn't want to like be driving around in it.
No.
What appeals to me about a Singer, about the classic Singer 911, is it is really over the top and really discreet. And if you don't know what it is, it would look
that's
just
the word.
Like, it would look like a normal, really nice, clean 911. If you don't know what it is, it just looks like
right
like the best
that's
old 911 you've seen.
The word that I had in my head was it's discreet.
And so even in a bright color, it still looks just like an old car.
It's special looking, but it's at the same time, like you just have to look at the details and you see like why it's special.
Yeah.
And
this new one with the like the this a good tribute to the 934.5.
Sure, yeah.
It's like it's so over the top. It's so attention grabbing, but
yeah
it's also like you're not driving an old race car. You're driving a new car.
It's very maximalist. Which
I mean,
is
like when you know the 934.5 and the cars that it's based on. Like it is
yeah
very it is very similar to that.
Sure.
But it's just like a lot, and it's a lot on a new car.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It looks like an, I think that's part of it too, is it looks like a new car.
Yeah.
Like versus the original Singer, which legitimately looked like an old car.
Right.
Just made better.
Yeah, and it was like kind of a, you know, if you know, you know, but if you don't, yeah, it's just a nice old Porsche that's like really clean.
Yeah, and that's the problem with the 930 Turbo Study too, for me, was that it just looks like, it doesn't look like an old 911 anymore. It just looks like a new car styled to look like the old one.
And we have that with the roof, which I don't like either.
Yeah, so basically... Brad was spot on when he knew that you were going to hate it, which, yes. I mean, honestly, for good reason. Did Brad like it?
I think he just liked that.
And we were talking about, you guys were talking about the classic coupe.
Yeah, I think he just liked that at the GT3 engine. Yeah. I think he's a little anti-Singer just because it is like a million dollar
fancy
man's 911.
Car. Yeah.
I don't want to put words in his mouth, so I don't know if he's anti-Singer, but I assume...
It's too late. We were putting words into his mouth right now. It's on record.
So I saw Brad in Ohio. Yep. I saw Myron, and I went and saw the Harrier Zagato.
Myron Vernis.
The Harrier Zagato was just everything I hoped it would be.
Kevin went to Ohio. So Myron Vernis, car collector, friend of the pod, bought a very special Toyota Harrier, which is... the RX 300, but for the Japanese market. And this one is styled by Zagato, which is crazy.
It's crazy,
and it looks crazy.
It's crazy. So it's a real wide body.
We'll post a photo, obviously, but you should look Google photos of this, because it is just crazy.
And so his is the 1998 version, which just became legal to import here. He bought it in December and got it over here, and it's great. And there was a 2006 version of the RX 330.
You have a brochure of that.
I have the brochure of that
one. So I mean, I can't even describe it. It's just like angular, and you know how the RX 300 is bubbly in its natural state, and this adds like angles.
Well, and it's also like, it was like the first Liberty Walk. It adds such a big wide body to it. That's cool. Really,
I actually did not know that it was wider. I thought perhaps
all the bodywork adds like significant width.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's cool. It lowers it. It has sports springs. It lowers it, and it has like a full like wing that like wraps around the whole, almost like three sides of the rear glass.
Yeah.
It's cool. And the color is, honestly, it's called Super Chroma Red.
Wow.
And it's like stunning looking. It's like this candy red. It looks really, really good. It has gold wheels. It's very cool. So I am working on a video for that car, finding out a little bit about the history of it. I'm really excited to get it out there.
It's a really interesting car. I mean, I think there is, like, the RX 300, I don't know if it's come back into like the car zeitgeist or not, but I've been thinking about them a little bit just because I think they've aged well.
I think so.
And it's, you know, we were talking about this earlier that it looks JDM. Like the RX 300 when it came out, and it still does. Like if you look at it, it's such a strangely styled car. Mm-hmm. And I think they're kind of cool.
They're cool. Yeah. Brad and Myron loves driving it. He enjoys having it around. And Brad's like, I don't get it. Brad's like, I don't get, like, I guess why it's cool. He's like, he gets why it's cool. It's weird. He's
like, I don't get why he
likes driving it, because it drives just like an RX 300. And I was like, I'm thinking, like, I think Myron won't allow himself to have like a real normie car. Yeah. So like, this is like the only crossover that he'll be like, oh yeah, I'll drive this. And now it's like, oh, this is pretty practical for stuff. This is pretty easy and convenient.
Yeah. I'm sure like, it just works theory, well.
It's great. And he has a very cool collection, and is very cool to share it and everything. And it was great.
Yeah. So watch out for this video.
So this is one of the weirdest, but also one of the most normal cars, because he always drives something interesting as a daily. And
this is not his only Zagato designed vehicle.
That's right.
So he's got a Stelvio. He's got two, right?
Well, he sold one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stelvio, Autech, Zagato, AZ1, Nissan. There's a lot of words.
So look this car up too, if you can remember all those words, because it is also extremely wild looking.
Yes.
It's front drive, right?
No. It's based on the Nissan Leopard.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a JDM coupe. It kind of is like a, I think it's almost like a luxury Silvia, or like
it's
related to the 300ZX.
It's the basis of the J30 as well.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. So, but it's just, it's so cool looking.
It's so cool. Yeah.
So, did he just buy another one as well?
He has. Like,
It's based on the Stelvio, but it's something else.
Also, I think they were supposed to make 200 Stelvios.
Yeah.
And they didn't quite find like buyers, or they didn't quite have the markets.
Yeah.
So it was like they made 106 or some such. Mm-hmm. And I think they made a follow up called the Gavia.
Yeah.
That was the same, same hard points, but like a little bit more normal bodywork.
Yeah.
But they only made 16 of those.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's wild too. Yeah. I think you'd mentioned it and I looked it up and
yeah, it looks really cool.
It looks really cool. Yeah, that's, I like, imagine driving one of those in the 90s.
I know.
You would, it, in Japan of all places too, it would just be wild. Speaking of which, the reverse of cars that were made for other markets but made it to the U.S., you know, the car that was, when I went to Japan, the car that I saw there that was made for the U.S. market but somehow made it to Japan as a sold product was
the Taurus.
No, it was a Chevy Trailblazer.
Oh.
And I couldn't imagine someone being like, yes, this is exotic. I want this. Because they have so much better cars there to choose from.
Better than the Trailblazer?
Hard to say. Hmm. Yeah, this was like the early 2000s Trailblazer, I guess. But it was wild seeing those there in right-hand drive. And I'm sure they made them here for like mail trucks or whatever. But
did they?
Maybe. It doesn't matter. What's next?
Well, I just wanted to touch on also, Brad had me, I stayed with Brad and Amanda and I had a good time. I drove Brad's 996 Turbo and his Dodge Neon.
Okay. ACR.
It's an ACR.
Yeah.
And it's in like a rare maritime blue.
Yep. And you said, so I was surprised actually, yeah. But you said it
kind of rips.
Was good. Yeah, and I was surprised at that, honestly.
Well, so it's like built crazy. It has like 210 horsepower or something. It's like the motor's been completely built. It's actually a story that's very.
Is it NA?
It's an NA.
Wow.
Yeah. It's got like. I don't know if it's got good suspension. Yeah. I don't know if it's aftermarket or if it's just the stock suspension was good, but it's like a buzzy little fun car. It's super light.
Yeah,
I can understand why Brad likes it because it is kind of, you know, he likes the lightweight and minimal and everything. It's a pretty cool car.
That surprised me so much because, you know, maybe in period I would have thought, okay, so it's fun for what it is, but now decades later. It feels like a fun little car to drive.
Yeah, because there's not fun little cars now.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, this is very charming, and it's like a really solid, sorted little 90s front-wheel drive coupe.
That's neat.
Yeah, it is the coupe.
I've only ever seen one, and I think it was at Redwood Austin.
Oh, okay.
And so do you think that in that context, too, other, you know, special cars of that era... I'm using air quotes a little bit, but like an SVT Contour, say for instance, do you think that's good in today's context?
Yeah, I do. I think the SVT
I know you love them.
It was good in yesterday's context as well.
I like the idea of them. I have no idea if they're good to drive because none exist anymore.
They're good. The interior, I know that I've said this before and I know that like it sounds like I'm exaggerating.
Yeah.
The interior was so beige that I always nearly threw up. It was the it was so beige. The interior, the steering wheel was so blah. The shifter was so bad.
It was a cast one piece interior, basically.
It was like a die-cast model.
Yeah,
right? It's like the dash has everything. It's like the buttons are all pre-molded. It was a gross interior, but a really good car.
Yeah.
And my friend's mom had one, and I got to drive it a number of times, and it was like super sticky, grippy, and like the front end just was. Really good. It had like 215s, which was like not as wide as the ones on my car, but it felt better.
Yeah.
It was a good car. I think those kinds of things are neat. Do I think that like an SRT4 is good? No. Do I think a Cobalt SS is good? No. Yeah. Do I think any of the stuff from like the 2000s? Probably not. But I like the lightweight older things.
That Contour is probably the same size as those other cars.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I'm so curious about like a Taurus show and whether they like the original one.
Yeah.
first or second gen. And if I could ever find a first gen
facelift.
No. Yeah, facelift. It actually doesn't really matter. Like, okay, pre or post facelift first gen in a manual with the cloth interior, I would absolutely jump on that.
What was the second gen?
Second gen, everything got squintier, but it was still had the torus shape.
I like the second gen.
Second gen looks nice, but I don't know. It doesn't feel as special. Okay, yeah, it doesn't seem as special to me. So, and I think the interior somehow worse in the second gen. Like, it became that cast in place interior from the Contour. What stuck in my mind was I remember seeing Tim Allen's Taurus show in Jingle All the Way. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He had like Borbit wheels on the
was
thing. Oh, not Jingle
Santa
All the Way.
Claus.
The Santa Claus. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that stuck in my mind.
And takes his son to Denny's or something.
Yeah, something like that. Anyways, I do wonder if those are actually good to drive. And I probably will only find out once I actually buy one, if I ever buy one. So
yeah,
hopefully they are.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. What else we got? Oh, well, so should we help Brad find a car for Amanda?
So you told me upon returning that Brad is looking for a replacement convertible,
mm-hmm,
because he's bought two that are ill-fitted for...
Two duds.
Nissan
Figaro and a Cadillac Elante. The Elante was not in the condition that he had hoped it would be, but he kind of felt obligated to buy it because he had driven to North Carolina or flown to North Carolina. I don't know. And then the Figaro was... maybe had an issue or two, and also it got too much attention, and Amanda didn't really like it. So he's like, I want something else. He's like, I'm thinking a Boxster. And I'm like, I'm thinking no.
Yeah.
She doesn't care about the same stuff with cars as you.
Yeah.
You need something, like, get something that's a Mercedes. Get something that's, like, real fast when you step on the gas.
Easy to drive.
And has a nice interior, and is easy to live with.
Comfortable.
And is discreet. It's special, but discreet.
Yeah.
And, like, that, I think, is the ticket. And so I think, like, a CLK AMG convertible or something would be really cool.
I will say that
you can
pick
nits over which AMG or which Mercedes or whatever, but I think
something. I think go small still. I like the SLK 55.
Okay.
You think that it might be a little too small, but I think it's very, like, it's easily manageable,
sure,
and it's fast and probably comfortable, and it has the serial killer air scarf technology.
Air scarf.
Yeah. And but here's the thing. I think one of the conditions assumed would be that it is a car that will work most of the time.
Hey, I mean, maybe.
So, because I did give thought to, what about, like, the 6 Series convertible?
Good choice.
The E63.
Yeah.
Those have aged well,
I think. They're good.
And the convertible looks actually pretty decent.
Yeah,
and
they don't have any V10s in their stable.
No, yeah. So if working all the time is a condition, that may not be ideal. I did think, though, because I was trying to think Japanese. What Japanese would be cool that it isn't, like, insanely expensive, like an LC or something. And the only ones I could really come up with were perhaps, or is perhaps, the Nissan Murano Cross Cabriolet. It's unique. It's comfortable.
Yeah.
But it's got
not
the VQ.
Like, fast. Well, it's got the VQ. Yeah, Brad kind of ruled out the SC430, which is kind of had a lot of...
honestly.
A lot of eggs in that basket. Kind of a lot of eggs in that basket, the SC430 basket.
Imagine getting the Pebble Beach Edition.
You get black with a red interior.
Oh,
my
God.
For my money, doesn't get
that's pretty good.
That.
I'm going to push for that Murano, though. I think they were all all-wheel drive, and it's Ohio.
That's
so
true. Yeah.
You know, it's an all-weather vehicle. Oh, you know what? Myron, you remember, like, I think a couple of years ago, he was looking for one.
He was.
Pretty hard.
Yeah, I thought that maybe he had gotten one, but I don't remember if, I don't know.
I
never
don't know,
heard about
actually,
it.
Actually, yeah. I don't know what the follow-through on that was.
Yeah,
but
I'll have to check back.
But he was looking for a winter beater,
yeah,
which that would have been
it would be great.
Amazing. Yeah. So there you have it. That's our consumer advice. Either a expensive to maintain AMG convertible,
mm-hmm,
a 6 Series that probably won't work all the time, or a convertible SUV of some kind. And that's all
I mean,
we have.
I see no flaws in any
not
of this
at
logic.
All. So forget the Boxster, which is actually not a terrible choice. And
but they already have a a Boxster and a 911 Turbo.
Okay, but the Boxster is not really a usable vehicle, right, for road use?
Not if you want a windshield.
Or wait, what about a 996 cab?
I feel like these are Brad picks. She needs something that is like different. Like the idea is like, I think she needs something that's like a different school of thought.
Yeah.
That Brad's not going to tinker with.
I will say, like, you can't tinker with a Mercedes convertible because that would just instantly ruin it. And I think everybody's on board with that.
Yeah.
So that might be the safest choice. An AMG convertible of some kind.
What about Evoque convertible? That's like the thinking person's Murano cross cab.
I think that is pretty classy.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that is a also working all the time vehicle. I have no idea what the Evoques are like. Despite like doing deep dives on Land Rovers, that is the one car that I've never looked into.
You know what?
Huh.
XK.
Ooh.
XK convertible.
That is classy.
Doesn't have to be XKR. I think any of them.
Yeah, but with the working all the time thing.
Don't get so hung up on that.
Most of the time.
Don't get so hung up on that. They have like six cars.
Maybe something a little bit newer. I mean, the XK is like...
No, like the
2010s one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe. I think those had the AJ V8s that were shared with the Range Rover. And as you know...
Those have a reputation for being bulletproof.
Yes. Yeah, so certainly no... $7,000 timing chain guide.
So you're just going to say F-Type?
Maybe F-Type.
F-Type would be a
good
pick.
Those are in the 30s now.
That's a cooler... That's more fun than a Boxster.
I think that's more fun
for people that want something
even
fun.
The base model is kind of like a little bit loud and raucous.
Oh, yeah.
But in a tame way, that might not be bad.
Well, the V6S was like the secret best.
Yeah.
And by secret, I mean everyone knows.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, that's not bad. I feel like you could use that... Maybe year round.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
There you go.
Yeah.
So we went British.
Yeah.
Is that the move?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. All right. There you go.
Well, another problem solved.
Yes.
You had written on here E-Class interiors.
Yeah. I had brought up E-Class interiors because they were faultless for the longest time. And then the latest generation that's come out, I just hate it so much. And
yes.
Yes. Kevin is distracted right now trying to...
I think I poured too much.
Was it that you poured it to the top that indicated that you poured too much whiskey into your glass?
Yes, it's overflowing.
We both have 212 E-classes.
Canonically the perfect gen.
Yes. And I really like the interior of our cars. Like, I think that they are... I like the interiors of the 213 as well.
Sure.
Slightly less keen on, like, the focus on, like, the screens, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I know this is, like, this is old man ranting stuff. But first of all, the widescreen was not standard on the 213, meaning that you could get a mix of analog gauges and the wide infotainment screen, but it was in a bezel that was meant for like the continuous screen. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it looks bad.
Yeah.
And the entire interior is designed around this screen. It is anchored by this screen, and I think it looks terrible.
Yeah, it's not just that it looks terrible, but it's like you don't have enough nice stuff in front of you because it's all this screen. So what's nice about the Mercedes interior of the 2010s eras is like there's metal, there's wood, there's soft touch plastic. It's a nice design. You see all these materials, they all are nice.
Yeah,
they all, like, there's something nice about them, and now all of that is blocked. 90% of that is non-existent because it's these screens that in 6 months will look and feel like a Kindle Fire tablet.
Yeah.
So it's like you just don't have nice stuff in the interior because it's all just void and it's going
to
be crappy.
Yeah, and there, you know, it's not to say that these aren't going to be high quality interior. So this is especially true of the latest one. And I say, like, I asterisk the 213 a little bit, the generation after ours, because at some point in time, that is a possibility that I would replace my wagon with a 213. And
yeah.
I don't mind the interior. I don't think it looks as high quality, but I'm sure the materiality is on par, at least. Yeah, there's more like knurled metal and
right.
like fancy piano finish, wood, whatever. And it's nice. But the latest generation that was just announced a few weeks ago, or a few months ago maybe, I don't like that. That is...
No, that's what I was talking about when I was saying it's all screens. And there's
this
not...
This is all screens.
There's not, that's something. The newest one, there's nothing that's not screens. Like, the amount of space that isn't screens is small and limited.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, that was the thing... That's the one downer point for me with the 213, is that I think there is just a little too much screen,
right.
like, there. And then the... I don't know if it's the 214. I don't know what the generation model is, but... That has taken it to another level where now it is the hyper screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just in front of you. It's not in the middle. It's also in front of the passenger.
You know the hyper screen? What if that was cheaper to make and less good?
Yeah.
That's what this is.
And the dumb thing with the hyper screen for me is that, okay, I get it. It's supposed to be like one big screen, but it's actually three screens that are behind like...
And they're like rectangular screens, right?
Rectangular screens, and they have like this fake vignetting to make it look like it blends into the glass, basically.
Oh.
But that aside, it sucks that it's just a screen now. Like, the whole dashboard is a screen, and you... The material, like the physical materiality, is secondary.
Right.
Now.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
All the premium touch stuff is just incidental, and everything is now screen focused. And
you're restating what I said, but a lot better.
Maybe.
I'm not sure I feel.
But
about
also,
this.
Like the marketing materials where they had like TikTok.
Yeah.
On the big screen, and then like I forget what else there was. They were featuring other apps. I feel like the demographic. I know that they're trying to aim like manufacturers are trying to aim a little bit younger, I mm-hmm. guess, for their customer base.
They want to bring that average buyer age down from 61 to like 56.
So the E-Class. I mean, I don't understand what Venn diagram they're working with there. Did you see when Porsche decided to rethink turning all Macans EV? They stated their internal, I guess, marketing statistics say that they wish that their average buyer started at 25. It was like 25 to 35, which is a little bit insane because, like, I think the Macan soon will be starting at like 60K or something.
There's no company whose average buyer is
less
than 40.
Do you remember the Honda Element and how that turned out?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
the average age was like 41.
No one young can afford new cars. Even if you like Nissan, with like they have like the Versa and stuff, like their average buyer is probably 38 years old.
Yeah, exactly that. I don't know what Mercedes's target demographic is, but like for the E-Class, that seems wild that it seems like they're targeting for a younger, affluent demographic. But even then, I don't know that the E-Class is what they'd be buying.
Average age of Nissan owners is 50 years old. I don't know if that's new buyers, but...
I feel like... That is somehow incorrect, but
I'm sure
that's
right.
wild too.
It was the first Google search results. So.
I feel like it's a lot of people's like first cars, which is why you see so many
but,
of them
I mean,
without
in general,
bumpers.
Like people under 40 are not buying new.
Oh, that's
cars.
True too. They're not
that's
like
the thing.
That's not the new car
the
buyer.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, and we don't have to go into a tangent about like how expensive cars are now because that's
right.
been talked to death.
Right.
But like it is crazy that it's not even 40 now. I think it's above 40. It's like $43,000 for a brand new car. And that's just a normie car.
Right,
nothing
right.
special.
I'm picturing like Porsche making the Macan. I didn't know that news about the Macan not going all EV.
Yeah, they're rethinking it because that's their volume seller.
That's the volume seller. And I'm picturing like when on The Simpsons when Duff Beer went non-alcoholic and it's like five minutes later and
well, that's the
he's closing the gates and he says, well, that's the end of me. That would be the Porsche factory. But I mean, it is, I don't know how many they sell in a month, how many Macans they sell, but it's got to be half of the lineup.
Yeah.
And...
Oh, they said it was something like 30% sounds low.
Yeah.
But maybe across all models, that's high. I'm not sure. But
yeah, but it's a lot. And there's just like, there's probably just not supply to make that many all EV. I don't know. It's...
Well, what they stated, the issue was that they were getting dealer pushback, as in they were afraid that since this is the volume seller, that customers would be reluctant to buy into it because EV adoption is just still not that high yet.
Yeah.
And there's no infrastructure, primarily because of infrastructure support.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, going all in on EV
well,
on their volume seller is
more
hard.
Expensive. It's like the price is going to go up by so much, I think, if it's all electric.
Yeah. And I don't remember what the Macan was released at. back in whenever it was, 2017.
It was like 2014.
Was it 2014?
15.
Oh, wow. Okay, it's a lot older than I thought it was. But I think maybe it started probably at 50 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not so crazy that they start at 60 now, but...
But I can't imagine them keeping it 60 unless it has the smallest battery.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely not. I mean, the Taycan is a completely different type of vehicle, I suppose. You couldn't have compromises. I can't imagine Porsche offering a compromised vehicle just to meet a price point.
Right.
Yeah, we'll see how they go.
I'm sure someone's going to name like 15 examples.
Yeah.
Compromised Porsches to meet a price point.
Yeah. What else we got?
Just a minor sport cross thing. Last thing was that a couple people, when they've seen my wagon, they're like, oh, you've got a wagon now.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm always like, I had a wagon.
So
it was my sport cross. And I guess people that are normies just see it as like a hatchback.
I guess so. So that's, what is the definition of a wagon?
Well, Jason Torchinski has written 9,000 words on the subject.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know. I mean, I think it's
Does it have to be a specific amount, shape?
It's kind of a specific shape. It's kind of like the amount of glass like behind the front
and
window.
And a minimum size?
Minimum size and minimum amount of roof behind the rear wheels or something.
But like if you think about it, like back in the 80s, there were a ton of compact station wagons.
Right.
And those are wagons.
Yeah.
So what about, is it that the Sport Cross had kind of like a rakish
D-pillar? And it's a small car. I guess people see it as like almost like Crosstrek sized and shape.
Which I think of as a wagon.
I think of it as like a five-door hatch, like the Mazda 3 hatch. Outback wagon, Crosstrek.
I think that you have like the third window, like the cargo area window, then it becomes a wagon. If you don't
but
have
like
that.
But like the CT200H is a hatch.
True, but it doesn't have... It doesn't have that third. It like it does, but it kind of cheats because it wraps around from the rear window.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a faux thing. So that's a hatch to me, and the Mazda 3 is a hatch to me as well. It seems smaller. I mean, it's probably the same size as any other kind of like the Crosstrek and whatnot, but it doesn't have that D pillar window, I guess, or the third window.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's just interesting that this has come up multiple times.
That's funny.
No one else thinks of the Sport Cross as a wagon.
That meant that no one else saw that as a special vehicle, a rare limited production vehicle.
I mean,
vehicle.
Still, I've told them enough times that they did, but it was just a rare special limited hatch.
Excuse me, but did you know this car was actually special?
I just got back from Oregon.
Yeah.
Where I saw friend but not listener of the show, Daniel Sloan. And
okay, but skipping... The lead.
Yes.
What happened several weeks ago? 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Oh,
yes. What happened to your car?
Okay, so my car, well, you could tell me better than I could because I wasn't there.
Yes,
I was in Ohio.
You weren't there.
I was in Ohio, and you facilitated my car being loaded onto a trailer to be shipped to Oregon.
Yes.
My 1980 911 SC.
Yes. So off it went to Oregon, and... It is severely hot in Houston, Texas right now.
It's dangerously hot in Houston.
It is dangerously hot. So it makes it extremely difficult to drive. And I can confirm this past weekend how difficult it is to drive a car with minimal AC.
Yeah.
So it's in Portland right now. And you went and saw it.
I went and saw it this past weekend. I drove to Summer Lake with Daniel and a bunch of friends for his birthday weekend. It was at 4,500 feet elevation, and it was a really good time. And I drove a lot. It was a long drive out there, and a really long drive back because we did a bunch of cool roads and stuff. But
yeah.
It was a really good time. It was about 700 miles.
Yeah.
It was amazing to drive the car there. It really was really special because Daniel and I have driven Houston to Oregon a bunch of times. We've driven road trips around Oregon. We've driven... Colorado to Oregon. Like, I've seen more of Oregon than most people that live in the state.
Probably so, yeah.
And it's great. It's really beautiful. The weather is really nice. There is deserts and mountains and valleys and plains and hills and canyons. I mean, there's everything.
So there are natural features, unlike natural features, here.
Unlike here.
Yeah.
So that was a reason. It was like, it would be cool to drive the car in the summer when it's hot, and it would also be cool to see, you know, to drive on these nice roads. But it was really special to me, like, driving back from Summer Lake. It was kind of like we went through Bend, and then this town called Madras, and then this town, Antelope, to get some twisty roads. We went through this canyon. We went through the Dalles. All these places that I had been through before on previous trips, including the first trip Daniel and I made in his M3 convertible back in 2016. So we kind of unintended to retrace some of those steps. And so to see that from my own 911 windshield and be driving that car there was really special and really, really cool.
You basically have only ever seen it through various M3s, E46 yes. M3s.
Yeah. The E38 and like the M3 Brew.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah. Yeah. Only through BMWs and like a couple miles in the Land Rover.
Yeah. And Daniel drove his Phoenix Yellow.
He drove his Phoenix Yellow M3 down to Summer Lake.
Yep.
And then he drove the 911 a little bit at the end of the trip on the way back, cause I was doing some filming. So,
and he didn't hate it.
He didn't hate it. I was really surprised that he wanted to drive. I wanted him to drive so I could fly the drone while, our friend Seth drove the M3 and Daniel drove the 911. So I wanted to fly the drone, get some stuff, but he wanted to drive it. I was surprised he wanted to get back in and drive again. He got the hang of it. He's a really good driver. He got the hang of it very quickly, and it was good. But yeah, it was funny to be behind the car while it's like whipping around through these roads and corners and stuff.
Yeah, it's always weird seeing your own car like being driven.
Yeah, definitely. And
so speaking of the heat, though.
Yes.
Like, now Portland is going through a heat wave. I think it's in the mid-90s there.
Oh my. Wow.
So you just missed that, and I don't know how long it's going to last. You may have just shipped your car from one hot place to another.
Yeah, well, it's still going to be hotter here. And I mean, you can, because of like all the microclimates, you could drive within 2 hours to somewhere that's going to be way cooler.
To be fair, also, over there, when nighttime arrives, it actually cools down versus here.
It gets hotter.
Then we have the radiant heat that's been like absorbed by the ground.
Yeah.
Keeping things warm. Mm-hmm. So that car is, it's going to live in Oregon forever.
I haven't made plans to bring it back yet, but I will bring it back in September after Rennsport reunion.
Yeah.
Is the plan.
You will not be driving it back again from Northern California.
No, I don't think so. Although if I don't have a plan, that will happen.
You should leave it in L.A. Ugh. And then we can go to L.A. Radwood.
In 2018, I drove out to Monterey and back in my 911 SC. But I drove to in L.A. for 3 days or so. I hated driving there so much in that car. Like, it was, I don't know. Something about it was really nerve-wracking.
That's your fault for getting on the 5 during rush hour. This was like every single day.
PCH, anything.
Oh, my God. Well, I look forward to seeing it because we'll be in Portland in August.
Yeah.
My car will not be there.
No.
But maybe I can Toro something interesting.
Well, I'm hoping if we do a trip, like, Daniel could take the E30 and we can, like, swap cars. Or, you know, you could hop between the two. You know, that would be...
Yeah.
Fun. That was the one thing I missed on this trip was like Daniel and I didn't ride together like at all. Like normally we have many hours in the car.
Yeah.
And this time because it was his birthday and there was a lot of people and because obviously he was a busy guy. He was busy. So
because it was his birthday, it was his gave birthday. Him reprieve.
That's true.
By not
yeah.
making him ride with you.
My gift was he didn't have to hear my rants for the 15th and 16th and then also 17th times. But yeah, we did have lots of good hangout catch up time. At the beginning of the trip, I have no complaints, obviously. Yeah, we didn't have a lot of time in the car together, which is unusual because usually we are riding for long distances.
Yeah, I could not do that. I don't even applaud you two. I don't know how you do. You sit in the car for that long. I am not a road trip person. Yeah. And on that note.
Yes.
All right. Yes. I think that might be a podcast.
I think so.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening. Do follow us on Instagram at newfor96. Email us if you must. What is it, Kevin?
I don't. It's newfor96.
AOL.com.
The numbers are spelled out. It's at Gmail.
Yes. And Twitter's there.
Is it?
Maybe.
Okay.
All right. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.